Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, welcome to Teach Me to Talk with Laura and Kate. I'm Laura Mize, pediatric speech language pathologist.
And I am Kate Hensler, developmental interventionist with the First Steps program here in Louisville, Kentucky. Hi, Laura.
Hi, we'd like to welcome you to our show today. It's Thursday, August 20th, and Kate, do you know we forgot to celebrate our one-year anniversary for the podcast?
I did not realize that.
It's been 1 year, and the reason I noticed is because today when I was signing into Blog Talk Radio, I saw I've been a member since July 30th, and I thought, oh no, how could we have not celebrated our anniversary? We're big on celebrations like that, so I don't know how we missed that.
Well, I should have put two and two together because it was when we were doing like our second show or something when I was taking Laura to school, my daughter to school last year for college. Now she'll be a big bad sophomore. Hopefully won't be quite as painful to say goodbye. For me, of course.
Well, you'll just have to do your Thursday road trips like you did last fall when we were doing the show on Fridays and you would talk in the car. You'll just have to do it. Do that this year too, huh?
Nah, it'll work.
Okay. All right. Well, today let's get back to talking about apraxia. You know, we've been talking about treating apraxia in toddlers and young preschoolers for the past several weeks, and we first started out a few weeks ago by defining what apraxia is, and I'm not going to do that today because I feel like I've done that for 3 or 4 weeks in a row. But we talked about that. We talked about the differences between apraxia and phonological disorders, which, again, those are two separate speech disorders that clinicians, therapists, and lots of times parents have a hard time kind of discriminating between. And so we sort of talked about what the diagnostic markers were for each of those. And then last week we started talking about our favorite thing, which is treatment. Really practical things that you can do at home, and these are the same ideas that Kate and I do in our therapy sessions with our little clients, our children that are in the early intervention program in our state. And so we shared the same strategies that we use in sessions and the things that we try to teach parents. And again, our whole purpose of this show is to talk about intervention and give you really practical things that you can do at home with your own children, or if you happen to be a therapist that listens, maybe some new ideas. And if you are a therapist that listens, we would absolutely love for you to call us. We have had very few therapists call the show in the past year. What do you think, Kate?
I know, and yet you get great feedback from therapists who either go to your website and use and share information from your website, or those who have purchased your DVDs, and they say, it's wonderful, thank you so much for helping me with working with this population, and yet they don't call in. So I don't know,
maybe they're hesitant
they're hesitant to say, you know, maybe ask questions, but they could call us and give us ideas about what they do, because we're never proud about taking good ideas. If it works for them, we're happy to use it for our kids.
Oh, I would love it. I would absolutely love it if we could get some therapists to call in. I think we had somebody call in last year that was a DI.
Right.
But I don't really remember very many. But if you want to call us and talk about this, we would love it. And again, to share your ideas, that would just be amazing to get some new perspective and some new little tricks. We would absolutely love that. Our call-in number is 1-718-766-4332. We'd prefer to kind of keep it on topic today with talking about apraxia and treatment ideas. But again, if you're listening live and want to call us, that's absolutely fine. And this is a special time for our show today. For the fall, we've moved the show to 2 o'clock on Thursdays. And next week, we hope to resume that. But today, Kate and I have a little meeting for a little boy that we happen to share. And we had no control over the scheduling the time, I guess. So, maybe it was scheduled so long ago, it wasn't when we had decided this was going to be our new time.
Right.
But anyway, we're back to 2 o'clock next week on Thursdays, and hopefully we'll get to start to have some more callers. And again, we would love it if they were a therapist.
Maybe we should do like the radio stations and just call therapists up randomly. Hey, you're on air.
That's a thought, huh?
I know a couple I could call. That would be funny. No, I'm kidding.
funny. Okay, let's get started. Last week we did talk about the ideas for kids who are nonverbal. And, you know, earlier in the week I thought, oh, I want to talk about this idea. When I was in a therapy session, I guess it was Monday, working with a little boy, and I can see the little boy's face, and I remember having that thought, but it has, it escapes me exactly what strategy I want to talk about, but hopefully that'll come back to me at some point during the show. But I thought about those techniques that we talked about last week, several times this week, since I have a, kind of a new batch of kids coming on, and those are the things, you know, as I was thinking through those things, I would think, okay, what are the things we talked about in the show last week? You know, let's do some animal sounds. Oh, gosh, he's not really into that today. Well, let me jump up and run around a little bit and really get him movement, moving and do some movement things and really get him going with that. And so, again, these are ideas. Don't just sit and listen. We want you to actually use those ideas. And sometimes parents will tell me about the DVDs, and I've had parents tell me this about the podcast, too. They'll say that they listened to the podcast, you know, like the week we did it, and then they went back and listened a couple of weeks later and picked up a couple of new ideas. Or with the DVDs, they watched one little section and then maybe went to work with their child and just concentrated on using one or two of those little techniques. So that's what we hope that you're able to do, is not only hear the ideas and think, oh, that's a good idea, but actually put those things in practice. And again, we would love to hear how those things are going from you, with you and from you. And if you're too shy to call, send us an email and we'll talk about it on air next week. And the email address is laura@teachmetotalk.com, or you can just leave a comment on the website at teachmetotalk.com. Oh, and let me interject another thing. We're never going to get started today with all this
That's
housekeeping
okay.
stuff I seem to be blabbering on about. But the website redo, it was supposed to be this week, and we've, you're going to be so surprised about this, Kate. Some glitches have occurred. Can you believe that? So that's been put off another week or two. And that's a whole other chapter of my life I haven't even talked to you about, so remind me to tell you about that later.
Okay. Well, on almost entirely positive note, your Apraxia DVD, what is it, Teach Me to Talk with Apraxia and Other Phonological Disorders, is almost done.
Almost done. I know. I'll feel like I get my life back.
Anxiously awaiting that to be done, because poor Laura has been burning the candle at both ends as of late, trying to carry a full caseload and get that huge project to market. So she's almost there.
Almost there. It's almost ready. And, you know, I had a little promotional post on the website that said if you emailed me and said that you wanted this very secret special coupon code just good for the pre-sale period, you can still do that if you're a podcast listener. I think the official closing date, I took that post off in the wee hours of the morning this morning, but you can shoot me a little email and say that you heard about it on the podcast if you want to get that $20 off coupon code. We'll probably do a little introduction sale for that with the $10 off, but it won't be the kind of deal that you'll get if you'll email me and ask for that special code. I'm not going to post that on the website anywhere, just for podcast and faithful readers from the website. Okay, now we'll get to our topic today.
Okay.
All right, let's start talking about first words and the kinds of things that we do when we think children really are ready to do those first words. And again, those are going to be not, you know, maybe the first time we see a kid. If a kid's not interacting, or if a child, if we think there are pretty significant receptive language delays or how a child understands, we're going to start with those kinds of things first. If we have a child who barely vocalizes or makes sounds at all, we're going to really use those ideas that we talked about last week. But when we have a kid that we've gotten to be pretty noisy and he or she is really kind of ready to start those first words, we want to talk about the things that we do kind of to get kids there and, again, to know that they're ready. You know, and we spent a lot of time talking about this first strategy or this first piece of advice a couple of weeks ago, and that is that we use lots of repetition and lots of almost requiring children to vocalize and to respond and to try those words. And I think our thing that parents say to you, Kate, and they certainly say to me, is, boy, you are persistent. You really keep at it. You don't have them just do it once, or don't just ask them to do it once. You have them do it over and over and over again. And I think that's something that lots of parents and therapists miss in when they're working with our population, because they are trying to be so naturalistic and do the whole follow the child's lead, that they don't stop and kind of think, how can I structure this word that we're trying to get, or this sign, still in the context of play? How can I set up this same situation over and over and over again so that this child gets enough opportunities to actually say the word? Or again, those multiple repetitions are what make those motor plans really fluid, and so that they can recall and use that word without as much difficulty.
Sometimes it can be hard to stay on the same word or the same thing over and over and over and over. I know there are times I have to force myself to do that, and probably would benefit from being better still at sticking with it, but they really do need that, because they need to hear it over and over and over and have many, many, many opportunities to imitate, if at all possible, what you're trying to get them to say. So,
and you can do it in play. Now, some speech pathologists who really maybe have previous experience working with older children, say you've been working in the school system and you've seen predominantly elementary-aged kids, and for those children, when you think about repetition, you automatically think about drill, or that we're going to, you know, just have them say it, say it, say it, say it, say it. You can't really do that with a toddler.
It would be nice, though, wouldn't it, Laura?
Yeah, it would be nice.
Get out the word list and say this. Yeah, it's not quite that simple, and it does have to be really, really embedded in play, or, you know, when I occasionally try something more structured, and not that I ever get out a word list, but maybe with a puzzle, and I'm really pushing them, you know, they can put the brakes on, and try as we may, there's not a whole lot we can do about a kid who decides he's not even going to try to say it. So we have
right.
to keep them happy so that they continue to try. And 2-year-olds aren't really about structure, in case you haven't heard that.
Yeah. But you can think, try to be a step ahead and think,
mm-hmm.
okay, what kinds of things, if I think he really probably would be able to say more today. I think he's been doing that sign for a long time, and let's see, he's got an M because he can pop out mama when he wants to, and let's see, I hear a good mm-mm-mm when we're doing those snacks, so I think he could probably say more if we really tried that word. And so you think, okay, how can I get him to want to use that word with me? And so what you do is, you know, what I do, and I know what you do, Kate, is too, we figure out, what does he love? What does he really, really, really like to do? And what is going to, you know, just in the nature of the activity, how can we set it up so that he doesn't just ask for more one time? How can we set it up so that he has to use that word over and over and over, and it can still look like a lot of fun, not just me bombarding him with, say it, say it, say it. So, you know, again, I really look for what we call motivators for a child. And, again, that would be his very favorite thing. So if he really likes Hot Wheels race cars, I'm not going to just get one or two race cars to play with. I'm going to ask his mom to gather up every stinking race car she can find in the whole house and bring all 35 of those to me. And, you know, no kid with his favorite activity is going to let you sit there and hold all his stuff. And, again, you're going to have to be really playful about it, you know, and say, oh, my gosh, we're going to have a race. And you're going to either, if you don't have a little racetrack that you can use, or if you don't have, you know, something formal, you know, Kate, you've talked about this on the show, is using a big book, you know, and set up a ramp that, you know, you make like it's a little hill there, and so you're going to lean it up against the couch, and you're going to one at a time get him to say more for those cars, and then make a big deal about racing them down that book, and then you're going to grab him at the end and hold him again so that he has to ask you for more and get those. If snacks are our favorite thing, to use for two-year-olds, but we don't just give them the whole bowl of Teddy Grahams, you know, one at a time. And boy, if I have a kid who's a slow chewer, I don't even give him a whole Teddy Graham. I am breaking it up so that it doesn't take him, you know, 2 minutes to eat the darn cookie. You know, you're just going to give one little piece and then let him ask for more again. And again, you know, more might not be the word that you've chosen. You've, you know, we talked about last week about really listening for the sounds that they say and the things that they say when they vocalize. And Kate, you might not think a ton about that since your training is different than mine, but I'm always kind of listening for sounds that I hear kids do in their jargon or babbling or even in word attempts that are off. If they've tried to say bye-bye with a D, but they consistently have a D, I think, okay, what D word can I do? How can I use that sound? How can I turn that into a real word that's more on target and matches more what we want to say? Or how can I make this sound, you know, how can I get this in words so that he can really use this sound? So that's something, you know, that you're going to want to do. And sometimes, you know, don't you find yourself, Kate, standing outside before you go into a kid's house and you're looking for different things to play? Sometimes I'll think, how can I get him, you know, on an emotional level today with what he really likes to do? But then secondly, sort of think about those sounds and
I'll look back at the word list from the week before just to refresh my memory, because not a guarantee, particularly with apraxic kids, because they're kind of known for getting a word once or a couple times in a session, and then you really, really, really may have to wait and work hard to get it again. But, yeah, and I do kind of think about that initial sound thing, you know, if they have two words. And it does, more often than not, if a little boy can say ball, he might be able to say bye, he might be able to say boo, he might be able to say, what's another big B word?
Bubbles,
baby, you know, bubbles is an easy one for any B kid. And there are a lot of those kids who they have a B and a D sound, but nothing on them.
Not much else.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that could be it, and it's not a guarantee that, oh, boy, you can think of any B word and they're going to get it. But the odds are better because that is the sound they have in their repertoire, and you may be able to. So, yeah, I do. I really kind of, and I guess I don't know if I heard you say that 10 years ago, Laura, or it just at one point occurred to me, they do better if I stick with those sounds that they do have on their couple of words, if there are any words at all. So.
And guess what, Kate? You're using a phonological perspective when you think about that. Can you believe it?
Well, I probably wouldn't have called it that. It's just like common sense to me, but
yeah. You know what? You're doing it, and we do it for apraxic kids, but we really do it with kids with phonological disorders too, because remember, when we do treatment for phonological disorders, we're treating patterns, not particular sounds. And so for a kid like that, if you think if he has a B, that's a lip sound. And with the lips, what other sounds can I make? Oh, gosh, what about that P, which is kind of the same sound as a B, but there's no voicing? Or what about an M? You know, he's got his lips together, too. So, again, you're kind of thinking about what sound is related there. You know, if a kid has a D, I try to get a T, or I try to get an N, because again, those are sounds that are made kind of in the middle of the mouth with the tongue. You know, your tongue tip is up. And so again, that's kind of taking it one step further. You know, certainly start out with, okay, he's got a B, so let's think about these B words, but you know, expand it a little bit and think, what other related sound can I get there? And, you know, I talk about this in the Apraxia DVD, and then I'm about to, well, gosh, I hope I get this done this weekend, but maybe not. But there's going to be an article on the website that talks about that with choosing sounds and what sounds are related, you know, these little sound classes. And again, it'll be written in a way that parents can understand it. You won't need a master's degree in speech pathology to get that. And then also the little cheat sheet of the sound strategies that are that Kate and I talk about. You know, P is our popper sound and T is our tippy sound. You know, those little cues. We're going to talk more about that later in the show, but I wanted to say that hopefully, certainly by the first day that the DVD is out, that article will be ready, because I refer to that in the DVD and what parents to be sure that they have access to that information so that they're not trying to take notes, you know, during the DVD or anything. But that's going to be on there, and that's certainly something that, you know, we try to think about when we're selecting these early first word targets for kids. And that's funny, Kate. You're thinking like a speech pathologist now, aren't you?
Well, if the shoe fits, by necessity, I have learned these simple things that do kind of hold true. I mean,
they do. They really do. And again, sometimes you made such a good point about apraxic kids are pretty inconsistent sometimes. So just because you've heard it one time, you really might have to work to do it again. And don't get frustrated if you think, oh my gosh, I can't believe he just said that word a couple weeks ago and I've not heard it again. You know, don't give up, because if he's done it once, he can do it again. You just may have to be a little more creative. And again, all of this really, sometimes when there's too much pressure on an apraxic kid, he really can't do it at that point. So again, you're going to have to be playful and really, really fun, but still persistent at the same time. And, you know, talking about it, sometimes, you know, I'll go back and listen to the show or hear myself say it out loud as we talk about it on here or talk about it with a parent. And it is kind of like a balancing act. You know, you want to be persistent and you want to make sure, excuse me, that you're giving the same opportunities over and over and over and over for the same words. But at the same time, you have to balance it with the play and make it like it's not work when you're working with kids as young as the kids that we see.
From what I hear from moms, typically, that is a common mistake that therapists can make, because, you know, I often see kids that are also seeing, sometimes I see them really kind of individually for speech, and other times I see them in conjunction with a speech therapist other than you, Laura, and I have moms tell me on a fairly regular basis when there's another therapist, a speech therapist involved, they'll say, he doesn't do anything for her. He, you know, he doesn't want to play. He won't say a word. He, you know, he's basically, I would call it shutting down. And I think that's because they forgot the fun part, you know.
Right, yeah.
Just because, and I think, you know, if therapists can make the mistake, then obviously parents could be guilty of the same thing by accident, and that's to think that just because a toy is involved, it's fun.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a start. We're with them on the toys, but that, you know, they forgot the really, really playful and animated and goofy, and so they brought the toy, but then they still put demands on without keeping it really joyful, really, you know. And
yeah,
I think that's obvious when you see the twinkle in their eye, and so often I end up laughing and giggling and having a great time. I like to joke that my therapy sessions with kids are oftentimes therapy for me, because
yeah,
hard not to have fun when the kids have fun. They're just so cute and adorable when they're happy. So, but anyway,
it is. But you know, as a therapist, especially, you can kind of check out during a session, especially
yeah,
if you've done it for a long time,
mm-hmm,
and kind of get on autopilot, and you're thinking about, oh my gosh, the next three kids I have to see, and oh, I didn't write that report, you know, and you kind of, you know, you do hope that in your career you get to the point where some of it really is autopilot and you kind of know what to do, but you can let yourself be so emotionally uninvolved that even though you're saying the right stuff and even though you have the right materials that are appropriate for your population, you still can kind of be checked out. So you do have to really, you know, be present, you know, and that can happen as a mom too. You're thinking about 10 things and you're, you know, thinking, oh, but I'm playing with them and I'm right here. You know, gosh, you have to be emotionally present. And like you said, Kate, be joyful and really enjoy what you're doing and not think about it. You know, therapy equals work.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for a kid, it really is play. And so to make it more playful, you really have to be more playful yourself.
Yes. I think that was the point I was started out trying to make, but
we got there.
Okay.
We got there. Let's see. Oh, you know, and we've talked about this a little bit, but a lot of therapists really don't like the idea of prompting words as much as we prompt words. or as much as we keywords, or as much as we, you know, make them say it, make them, because they really like those naturalistic approaches, again, following a kid's lead. And there is nothing wrong with that if the child really has a language delay and if you're, again, working more on interaction. But for kids with speech disorders, for kids with especially apraxia, motor speech disorders, they absolutely have to be able to say something more than once or twice for them to really get that word and own that word. So you have to set up those situations. And, you know, if you are familiar with some of the other language facilitation programs and stimulation programs, they really will say, you know, talk less, listen more. Don't always cue the word. Wait for them to say it. Let's be spontaneous. That is fine for language. And we do some of that, but if you are really working with a kid that you know has a motor planning disorder, you have got to prompt it and cue it and model it over and over and over and have a little bit more structure or more demands placed on the child, because if you don't, he or she is never going to get the practice that they need to make those words become more automatic for them. And that cueing and prompting is the backbone of every expert, whether you're looking at, you know, an apraxia expert, David Hammer, Nancy Kaufman, all of those really big names in apraxia treatment, they all rely on imitation and on cues. And I think some of our colleagues, especially that aren't speech pathologists or that aren't really as language-focused DI as you are, Kate, and speech-focused, would disagree with using the QQQ prompt, like we do. But if you think about it, with the particular children that we're talking about, you have to do it that way, and the experts tell you to do it this way, and it's we're putting the little toddler twist on it with play, 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 but you have to still set up those situations for them to talk and use their words over and over and over again, and you're not ever going to get the motor planning piece or the automatic speech like you need to get. Are you there?
Yeah.
Okay. And I'm thinking about the thing that makes me think about this is some of our colleagues that are psychologists really talk about not cueing and not prompting. And if you read a lot of Dr. Greenspan's stuff, he doesn't really emphasize modeling and prompting and cueing as much as we would, but he's really talking about language therapy rather than the speech disorder therapy. So that's the difference there for you moms who are having a hard time kind of sorting that out. All right. Let's move on a little bit. Children with apraxia and children with a phonological disorder need lots of practice hearing the word, too. And we've talked a lot about, you know, we're going to make them say it, say it, say it. But a lot of kids also need to hear that pattern because, again, children with phonological disorders have it fully established, the particular word or pattern in their mind, so they have to hear that over and over again. For older kids, the technique is called auditory bombardment, and with speech pathologists, say with a 5 or 6-year-old, really might want moms or dads to really read through a word list and say if your pattern is final consonants, they're going to have a kid listen to a word list but not necessarily repeat the word after them. Caroline Bowen's therapy, which is called PACT, it's Parents and Children Together, has a big listening component in her therapy programs. And again, that's fine for older kids, but I really don't think having a 2-year-old sit and listen to you read a word list is probably going to be very effective, one, because of their attention spans. You know, a lot of our friends can't even sit through a story that's got a plot, you know, and pretty interesting things, so I can't imagine that they could sit and listen to hat, bat, boot, cat, foot, you know, all words with final T. So, again, you have to really be a little bit more creative. And when you're setting up therapy situations or play situations with your child, if you know that you're working on a particular sound or pattern, you need to collect those toys and play with those things and really get those things involved in a more functional or more real way to them. You know, and a lot of therapists, boy, those darn flashcards, Kate, they keep coming up with parents who will ask about it or met a family yesterday that I'm, once again, the replacement speech pathologist, and they were talking about the worksheets and things that mm-hmm. they had gotten from the previous person, and the little girl's 2.5. And mm-hmm. I just so disagree with that. And those things are fine for older children, but not for toddlers and young preschoolers.
Well, and for, you know, apraxic kids, I have had a few apraxic kids over the years on my caseload who were really, their receptive language skills were great, and they loved books, and but they would have sat and listened to stories or word lists for a long, 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 long time, and I don't think that it would have helped them pop a word out or get any words out any faster than, you know, I mean, I've come in and worked on with kids who've had those kinds of therapists, and the mom would say, well, she reads to him. Oh, he loves books.
Yeah. If it were just from hearing.
Yeah, he got the word. I mean, he understood the words.
Right, yeah.
Beautifully, you know, beautifully. But couldn't get it. He had only a couple words when I came in and did the LARMize approach. And lo and behold, he did beautifully with some more playful demands placed on him. He really, really rose to the occasion. But I just don't think that it crosses over, even if you happen to have a kid who's willing to do that.
Right.
They don't turn around and say them, just
right.
from hearing
you're,
it.
Mm-hmm. You're exactly right. Mm-hmm. You know, and one thing that we try to do is, and we try to teach parents, and sometimes I didn't always call it this in my official therapy strategy section when we're doing a child's IFSP, but the technique is called recasting, and that's where you take your target word or your target sound, and you're going to use that in a word over and over and over, and the goal, and again, this is the Caroline Bowen recommendation, is that you aim for 12 to 18 recasts per minute for 3 to 4 minutes at a time, several times a day for the same word or pattern. And so, you know, a mom will say, okay, you know, her eyes glaze over, you know, when I give those numbers at that point. And I think all that means is if we're working on, from a sound perspective, again, if we think that in words that start with D are going to be good for him because he's got a really good da-da, you're going to want to think of words in the context of play that start with D and use those over and over again. And you really don't have to sit there on your fingers or, you know, keep a little list. Okay, I said down one time. Okay, I said down two times. I said down three times. You're just going to want to really think about it in the course of the day. Did I use the word down? You know, did I use the word, oh, help me with another D word, Kate. Diego. You know, did I use, can you think of another D word?
I'm thinking of short ones, dog, door.
Dog, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, you think about those and you think, okay, that's something he can do. That's something I think he can say. I need to say this a lot so that he's heard me, which, again, is getting your hearing piece in there. And again, you know, you're not doing it with say dog, say door, say Diego, say Dora. You know, you're not going to do it that way. You're going to do it when you're talking about things through the course of your day and really kind of make it sense and make it make sense to your child and use it over and over. That's called recasting. The other fancy word for this is called focused stimulation, and that really is more in the language lay literature, but same premise. You're taking something that you're trying to teach your child, and you as the adult are going to focus on it, and you're going to stimulate that new pattern, and if you're looking at it from a speech perspective, that new sound by using it over and over and over. And the research on that is quite good. It says that children don't necessarily get it in imitation, but there's great carryover of that later, you know, with the studies that they've done with that. And again, I would disagree with that whole little imitation piece. You do want to make them imitate, but there is great research that says as an adult, if you focus on this and if you recast and reword and try to, again, use those sounds, use those patterns over and over and over, your kid is going to be more likely to get it than if you don't focus on that. Boy, that was rocket science right there, wasn't it?
Yeah, good thing they did the research on that.
Yeah, good thing. I wonder how many thousands of dollars we spent on that. Okay, Now, once we start to really get words, you know, again, we've set up these situations where children hear it, hear kind of our little target word, and again, we've kind of picked those based on what they can already do. We want to make sure that once we start to get those words, that we carry those over to new situations and new context and new people. And, you know, moms are really good about this because they'll, this is funny, you know, dad will come home and they'll say, "Oh my gosh, did you hear, you should hear what he said today. Say birthday," or, you know, something they heard their kid pop out one time, and then, you know, you can just see the little boy again, his little face goes blank, like, "What are you talking about? I'm not going to be able to say that again." You know, they want to show off that word. Again, you want to do that, but you want to make sure that makes sense, so that if your child has been successful, you know, popping out a new word or saying a new word earlier in the day, and you want to show dad, use the same toy, use the same situation, set that up again so that he can use his new words. With a new person, if he's used a word in one context, say that you've been eating cookies and he's asked you for a cookie and you've never really heard a good k before and you've gotten it today, or even if it's been a T for a K, you know, who cares, tootie instead of cookie or ooey, you know, whatever your kid has said, and he's done that in the context of asking for cookies, you know, you want to, the next time you're playing in your pretend kitchen, you want to get out the pretend cookie and have him say it for that, or have him, you know, point to the picture when you're in the grocery store, you know, that's on the label of the box. You know, you want to make sure that you're generalizing these words to new situations and new people. As a therapist, and Kate, I'm sure you can comment about this too, I'll get so frustrated when we've worked really hard on a word and we've gotten it, and I'll go back the next week to see the kid, and we'll say to the mom, "Oh my gosh, did he say that again?" And the mom will just go, "Oh no, I forgot. We didn't. Mm-hmm. We haven't done that since last week." You know, I want to shake her at that point and say, "Oh my gosh, he did great with that word. How come you haven't tried to practice that again?" Because kids really need that, those extra opportunities to make those solid, consistent words.
Sometimes I have them kind of switch gears and focus on something entirely different, and I think, oh.
I know. I guess
any effort is good, but it would be nice to have lots of carryover, because that practice is so key for these kids, you know.
Yeah, yeah, and that's why I leave, and I think you do this too, Kate, I leave word lists that, you know, I kind of keep notes while we've played in therapy with what a child has been able to say that day, and I ask moms to, you know, put it on their refrigerator or keep it in the den or put it in a place where they're not going to forget about that, so that they can look at that during the week and really try to include those words in their everyday routines. And so, again, that's making the child get more practice with that, because if he said it with me, I want him saying it with mom and with dad and with big sister and with grandma and with a babysitter and at Mother's Day out and at church and all the places that he goes. I want him really being able to use that word, you know, not just to be able to say Elmo when he sees my Elmo Jack in the box, but to be able to use that word when he comes on TV, when he sees Elmo on his diaper, when he sees the Elmo balloon at Kroger, you know, really be able to use those words as he lives his little life.
And normally the things that we do focus on during a therapy session are very everyday useful words for two-year-olds. So
right,
not really that hard if the mom or parents are just really focused, then, you know, they do have to kind of remind themselves, "Oh, yeah, Laura wanted me to work on such and such." But they do come up. I mean, they're not, you know,
pure strange
words that are hard to work into the daily routines. It's just a matter of reminding themselves to do it. So.
Right, and I think the little visual reminder with the list is a good way to do it. If you have heard your child, you know, you're kind of got your thinking cap on and you're thinking, "Oh, I heard him say this word, you know, jot those kinds of things down, because that's great information for your speech pathologist. You know, if when she comes next week, if you're doing a home visit, or, you know, heaven forbid, if you're seeing somebody in the center and you don't ever get a chance to really communicate with her other than, here you go, and, you know, on the way out the door, good session, see you next week, you know, that might be an opportunity for you to kind of hand her the list and say, these are the words that I've really been hearing at home, or these are the new words I heard him say this week. You know, again, as a mom, you can be a little bit proactive and give the therapist a list, too. I love it when I get there and a mom kind of has a little word list waiting for me that she's heard or that she's done during the week, because it kind of gives me the launching point, you know, not only for, oh, my gosh, I'm going to try to get him to say this kind of stuff for me today. This is great. Or, you know, I'm doing my little sound analysis and thinking, okay, if he got that, let's try this. Or, gosh, I see 10 words with a D here. That's a great established sound. Okay, if he can do a D, I bet I can get an N. You know, so looking at that, you know, work as a team with your therapist, or if you're a therapist and you're not so great with communicating with moms, this might be an opportunity for you to say, hey, I want you to keep a little word list for me this week, and this is why I want it. I want to see, one, what he's saying for you and what he carries over, and two, it's going to give me some new ideas to use during the therapy session, and three, it's going to help us think, what sound is next? You know, what can we do? We only get this one sound, this, you know, maybe the beginning G, we only hear that in go. That's the only time he can seem to use a G. Let me think about that for a minute. Is that because he can only do it with an O? You know, what other vowel sound is similar to that? You know, is that, you know, let me use my really, my phonological skills myself here and think, okay, why is he able to do that? You know, he can do a good T for, two, you know, let's see if we can't get a similar word to that. So, again, use your parents if you're a therapist, and if you're a therapist, I think I said that backwards, or if you're a parent, use your therapist like that. You know, really kind of get your heads together and wrap your arms around some of these things and think about how you can work together and move your child along.
And let me just interject, for parents who are listening and thinking, what?
Which is bound to be happening right about now.
Because when you start to say things like, oh, if he can get a D, maybe I can get an N, and no, 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 you know, those things, some of that makes perfect sense to me, just because I too have done it a long time, but as Laura said, I don't really have the formal training to know those things,
right.
And in my mind, really, don't let that intimidate you or slow
not
you down
all.
In any way.
Yeah.
I think really, I don't mean to step on your toes in any way, Laura, but really the playful repetitiveness of everything else you've said can make up for not really knowing some of those more technical things about, you know, this sound and that sound. And, you know, so if you really, really, really just focus on those parts of what Laura talks about, then some of these things you'll begin to become aware of as your child gets a little better, it's a little easier, and you'll start to see those trends, and they'll make sense to you when you see them.
Right, yeah.
And my everyday common sense way of thinking about some of the things she's talking about is sometimes I'll stop and ask myself, well, where does that sound come from in your mouth? You know,
right.
Where is your tongue when you say a D sound? Where is your tongue when you say a T sound? Oh, those are kind of close, aren't they? So, I mean, you don't have to really know the whole, you know, exact information that, you know, that a speech therapist would know. And I can honestly say that if you do the fun, playful, repetitive, withholding and signing and modeling and cueing, you're going to have a lot of success, because I know a lot of speech therapists who know all those things, but they don't have those things, and I can get a lot more words than they can get. So you don't necessarily have to have all that knowledge, you know, going into it. Some of that will
be really
obvious.
You really don't.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you know, and I never want to, and I'm so glad you brought that up, because I don't want any mom to be intimidated by this and to think, oh my gosh, I'm never going to know that, I'm never going to have those technical skills. That's okay, because that's why you have your speech therapist. But you do know your kid, and you know what works for your child, and you know what your child says best for you and for what things you hear. So my point about all that, which apparently I didn't make very well, is for you to, keep some of those lists and things, because your speech pathologist can take her extra knowledge of sounds and how they're made and what might work and what's going to be what vowels are going to be easier with what consonants, just kind of based on what your child is doing. She can take those things. So that's why I'm saying work together. And, oh, gosh, I so don't want anybody to be overwhelmed by this information. I do sometimes think, okay, today this show is just going to be for parents. This is really going to be for parents. And sometimes I guess I go off on my little butt. I get all these emails from these speech pathologists. And so I'm going to put that hat on today. And I guess that I got a little carried away with that there.
No, so. You didn't at all, Laura. I just was thinking, okay. Oh, I could hear parents thinking, what is she talking about? You know, because it's not obvious. It's particularly when your child isn't saying very much, and you haven't, you know, there are only a couple words, but over time, just as I've become more aware, and I certainly don't claim to know what you know, but, you know, some things do become kind of obvious, and I just wanted to say that. Kind of think about the words he has, kind of think about what your mouth is doing as you say them.
Right.
And you're going to have a better shot at getting a guess on the next sound just by basing it on how your mouth moves and works when you say a word.
And that is great advice. And I really am going to get that article up because, again, I refer people in the new DVD. I say, check out my website for blah, 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 blah. And that always is the pressure to me to actually get it written and there.
You're going to have to do it.
It's in draft form now. But it is going to be finalized on there the day that the DVD could possibly be in someone's hand and they've paid money for it and expect it to be there. You know, that's going to be up there. And, again, it's going to be like a little primer, just a little, okay, you know, these are lip sounds. These are good words to try. This is a good kind of little cue to call it. So you'll be able to have that little cheat sheet there. And these aren't my original ideas. These are tricks that I've learned from different people. These are things that Kate and I have, you know, said, oh, my gosh, when I, you know, just had little ideas, or I call it this, or I heard somebody else say this. You know, this is just a compilation of, 10 to 15 years of thinking about this and doing it and knowing what works with kids and just some little tricks. So I promise that's going to be on the website in a couple of weeks. Okay. Let's see. Where were we with our little strategy thing? This is an important point, and I know what we've talked about this before, but I want to reiterate it today. While you're being playful and while you're thinking about all these little first word things, you know, maybe, you know, he's got this really good sound. I bet I can get another word that starts with this sound. Even if you don't and your kid is way off, say that the word you're trying to get him to say is car, and you're hearing dar, but it's the very, or da, or duh, you know, something way off, but it's the very first time that he's tried to say it. You want to really, really, really praise any attempt that he's made to do that and accept his approximation and accept his attempt, because for a new talker who barely has done any words, it is so hurtful to some of them. Some kids could care less. You know, they're so proud of themselves. You know, they think, oh, I said it, great. Mm-hmm. Or they don't even know that they're so off target. But some kids, can't you see them, Kate, when they just kind of get, they're so proud, you know. Everything they said during one session might have sounded the same. And then a mom will say, not gill for milk, 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 you got to say it this way. You know, it just is very hurtful to some children, you know, and my feelings get hurt for them too, because I feel like, gosh, they're trying. He's doing the best he can, you know, so you don't want to overcorrect. You want to really just model the correct sound and say, yay, or good try, and really praise all those attempts, especially in this first phase. You know, if your child doesn't have more than 50 words or 35 words and has not really moved on to phrases, you don't really need to be overcorrecting sounds yet. You know, there will be time for that later, and you can clean those things up. But for a new talker, you really, really need to be so darn happy about any little word attempt that you get, even if it's way off. On the new DVD, there's a section where the little girl that we filmed is Ainsley, and she's just precious, and oh my goodness, you should hear her talk now. But when we first filmed her back in December, she was hardly doing anything, and my goal for her that day was really to get her with these motor planning issues. She has lots of oral groping and oral scanning, and, you know, sometimes moms have never seen that before, so they don't know what that is. So I really, you know, kind of looked for a kid that I could, on my caseload, that I thought, oh gosh, I can get this on camera and show. Even sometimes therapists haven't seen it. And she decided that day that she really was going to try to talk, which is a big surprise to her mom and me, which is great because you can see our excitement, you know, like, oh my gosh, I can't believe she said that, you know, and it's truly, you can see the look of shock on my face. And she, so many of her things that day were, I think the first thing that she said for us was cracker, but and she had never tried that before. So, of course, it was da-da, you know, for cracker. You know, I'm using my sing-song voice. She's copying that. Well, then we take out a cookie, and I'm going, cookie. And what does she say? Da-da. You know, the same sound that she just said for cracker. But you don't go back and say, no, I said cookie. You've got to say it different. You know, you're really still going to be excited about that and really praise her attempt and make her feel like she wants to try more, because as she talks more and as she practices more, those sounds are going to get closer and closer. Her little system's going to mature, and she's, you know, would start to be able to differentiate some of those consonants and vowels and not use the same darn da-da for everything. But early on she did, but we were so excited about that because I had seen her at that point for 3 or 4 months and we had not gotten any of that. You know, we were excited just to get those attempts, even if they weren't on target.
And a kind of along the same lines, Laura, I think I'm correct on this, but you can correct me if I'm wrong. I seem to think with the praxic kids that sometimes, particularly, you know, you've set up a situation, you've gotten them warmed up, everything's great, you're cueing a word, ooh, they're imitating it, sounds pretty good, and then over the course of however long you're there, however long you're playing with them, their attempts become, you know, a little farther off target, and sometimes I hear moms, family members, whatever, caregivers at the daycare say, oh, you just said it. You can do better than that, that kind of thing. You know, like
right.
Not trying.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I always think, oh, he's just kind of worn out on that right now. We're going to have to switch gears, try it again a little later, you know, because that's kind of how apraxic kids are. They can get it sometimes and really not get it other times. And to me, if they're vocalizing and giving you the look like, I'm with you, they're trying.
They
know.
Are trying, mm-hmm. Yeah. And even if they're not, even if they're at the point where their eyes are glazing over and they're getting tired, you know, you can see them start their little posture. Boy, they're not standing up jumping anymore. They're sitting, and they're starting to kind of, you know, you see those pop those little legs out like they're going to W-sit. And, you know, you think, gosh, they need more stability here. Boy, they're getting tired, and their little shoulders, you can start to see them kind of bend over, and then before you know it, they're laying on the floor. They're tired. They've had it. They have worked hard, and so naturally their attempts are not going to be as on as they were. And for the kids who weren't on in the beginning and they still were trying, they may be way, you know, beyond what you would even think about being off target at that point. So you really do have to cut them a break and think, you know, he's doing the best he can. He really worked hard today. Let's back off a little bit and just play. Or, you know, now is when I'm going to think about, you know, working on his language, you know, giving him new words that he doesn't necessarily say, but, you know, new words that he understands, or, you know, work on whatever your other secondary goals are for
right.
a kid like that.
Sometimes I'll have them where they start out, and, you know, say we're doing more, and sometimes, you know, they'll come close on it. You'll hear part of it and think, oh, that's great. And then as they do it, you know, because I always start with more pretty early on and push it pretty hard, but they kind of, they go to that, whatever, if they have a default word, which many apraxic kids do, and by that I just mean the word that they kind of use for everything, even if they seem to understand what they're saying. You know, you show them the ball and you say, what is it? And they say, da, and you show them
yeah.
the shoe, and they say, what is it? And they say, da, and yet you can say, go get your shoes. Give mommy the ball, and they do it, so you know they know those words, but everything is deaf. They'll start out when they're up and everything's is, you know, optimal, then they'll come close on the word. But then as they get tired and just worn out physically, really, and mentally, then they sometimes default to the thing again. So,
right.
To me, it's
or if you've made it too hard,
mm-hmm.
if the word you're trying to say is too hard, that's when they'll go back to the da. Or say you've gotten a lot of words and you think, great, he's ready for me to bump him up to phrases. You
right.
know, and you start with phrases, and then lo and behold, da is right back there with you. You know, here's cheese ball, da da. You know, here's we're gonna puzzle, da da. Here's you know whatever two word phrase or even a more difficult word with two syllables. You know, you're right back there at that default word, and that tells you, oh my goodness, he's either A, really tired, or you know, we've just done all we can do today, or two, I'm making it too hard. And that is one thing that I went back and kind of added to the DVD at the very beginning, this the new Apraxia DVD, and I wish that I had done it on Teach Me to Talk and on Listen and Obey 1 and 2, is if you're introducing these new things to your child and you've really tried, you've made a good effort for a couple different weeks or, you know, a couple of weeks, and you're playful and you're fun and you think you're just doing everything right, it may just be that you've picked something that's too hard. And so you need to back up and work on things that are in the, you know, they're kind of a step down from that. And the way that I set up the new DVD is that it's very, very sequential. You know, I did kind of the background information and then, you know, started with ideas for language, you know, which, again, we want kids just kind of knowing words and understanding words, and then moved on to the speech sound stuff. And it's first, you know, we talked about nonverbal, the things that we talked about last week, the strategies for that, and then the first word section, and then the section on more difficult words, and then the section on phrases. Well, sometimes a parent, no joke, a kid might have 10 or 15 words, and they think they're ready for phrases yet. You know, they just think they're ready, and so they move on. They think, okay, he can say bye-bye, and he can say daddy, so boy, let's smack it together, bye-bye daddy. Or they've got two signs, more and please, and then I go back the next week, and the mom says, she's not just cueing more, she's saying, no, you've got to do more please, and I think, oh boy, I didn't do a very good job telling her, you know, we really need more than this before we start to do combinations. That is way on up the ladder from where we want to be right now. You know, you want to make things just a little bit harder and require just a little bit more. You can't really cheat and skip lots of steps in between. So sometimes when a kid is not getting it, it's because you've made it a little bit too hard. So you want to kind of think about that too. And I think about that in therapy. I'll think, oh boy, I skipped some steps in between here. You know, he had a few signs. We can't just go straight to, me thinking we're going to have 40 words in one session. You know, he had 5 signs last week. Let's try to get 10 signs this week and maybe 1 or 2 real words that he tried or spoken words.
Mm-hmm.
So you do want to make sure that you're kind of looking at that, looking at things like baby steps and not rushing ahead. And because that's frustrating for a kid. That's when you see shutdown more often than anything, don't you think?
Right. That and failing to keep it fun are the two biggest things. And sometimes parents, and I totally get that as a mom myself, that parents, I've had some moms say, well, we say daddy, not dada.
Yeah.
And I try and explain, well, I get that, and eventually I'm sure we'll get there. But for some kids, starting out with daddy is just way too hard. So
right.
They can't get daddy, but they can get dada.
Right.
You know, they can't get mommy, but they can get mama. And you got to give them, or those animal sounds. A lot of parents don't really feel like, well, who cares if he can moo, you know?
I do. I care. Yeah.
Well, and, you know, in the big picture, I'm not so sure. I care only because, really, I know that it gets them moving along.
Right.
It gets them trying to imitate. It gets them, you know, getting some sounds out. I understand they would prefer to have more functional, useful, real
right,
words.
Yeah.
And trust me, we would too, huh, Laura? I mean, if we
yes,
could wave our magic
I'm
wand
joking.
To do that, we would. But, you know, you got to meet them where they are, really. And so, anyway, just a cautionary note about, like you said, Laura, check and see. Have you done everything else Laura tells you to do right and you're still not having success? Maybe you just started out with the bar a little too high. And if you spend a little bit more time, and that's true of any learning process, if you just kind of, you know, practice makes perfect, but if you, you know, I'm not an athlete. If I tried to go out and run a 5K, I'd probably need oxygen and an ambulance to take me out of the facility. But I might be able to go half mile, and that's really just the same concept, is to keep it just a little bit above where they are, and you'll have way more success.
Way more success. And I love how today you have said about 10 times, and keep it playful, and keep it playful, because that is the key to working with toddlers and young preschoolers. And you can, and like you said before, you can have a therapist that understands all this stuff about what consonants and vowels are going to be easier for your child to do based on the sounds that he makes, but if she forgets to play and have fun and to use things that your child likes and things that are motivating to your particular child, she's not going to be very successful. She may have much better clinical skills and on paper know a lot more and certainly be able to, you know, theoretically talk about tons of different things, but then you take you know, just the mom approach, we're going to play and we're going to have fun and I'm going to try to get this word, I'm going to try to get him to say this word 25 times and he doesn't even know he's going to, you know, have said it that much or talked that much. He's just going to be having so much fun. You know, I would much rather have that situation than someone who is so philosophical but lacks the basic approach that makes a mom or a therapist successful with a toddler.
And just two things, and then I think we're probably over time. But first, if you want to see that playful approach, go to Laura's website. She has clips. Well, where did you say it is now, Laura? Where can they see it?
You can see it on the website. At you can pull up. You know, you could. There's a category on there that says DVD. You can get it from the homepage. You know, just when you type in teachmechart.com, and there's a little bar at the top that says search, or I think it says go, really, and you hit that drop down menu and you can select DVD, and then it'll pop up to a different menu with little with little articles, and you can find where it says teach me to talk or buy the DVD or something like that. That, or if you're on Facebook, you can go to teachmetotalk.com. Yeah, it has all the clips from the ads for the DVDs are all right there, and you don't have to search and search for them. You can just pop through there. You can become a fan while you're there, too. Oh, forgot to turn my cell phone off. Sorry about that.
Yeah.
But you can watch that there. And just so everybody knows, I don't ask Kate to promote the DVDs like she does. You were just such a good friend to me that you always put that in there.
As much as I think I'm a good friend, really, I can honestly say I'm the world's worst salesperson. And I know it does sound kind of like because I'm getting a kickback or something here, which I'm not. I mean, I enjoy doing this show, but I have nothing to do with your...
Yeah, this is not a paid position, is it?
No, I'm not sure why I do it. But anyway, no, seriously, I say that because I do think, I mean, think how many therapists don't know how to make it fun. So
right.
I feel for parents who are thinking, make it fun.
What does she mean by that?
Yeah, how do you withhold... How do you cue? How do you model? But keep it fun. And that's something that, you know, professionals who have been to graduate school to learn, in theory, how to do that, don't know how to do. So that's why I remind people, if you're listening and you're wondering, and even if you think you know, go ahead and take a look. And if you're impressed by it, and I trust that you will be, by the DVD, they're not that much, so, but, you know, at least look at the clips so that you see it, because I do think I see how often it's missed in the real world by speech-language pathologists who have master's degree in this sorts of thing. They don't get it, so I trust that there are a lot of parents out there thinking, or maybe they're not, but they should be thinking that. You know, they should know that it's not as obvious or necessarily easy to make it fun as it might seem. I mean, you could play with your child for 2 hours and not get a word out of them, and you're thinking, I played, I was nice, I had fun, they had fun. So, you know, I mean, I think we kind of tend to take it for granted, but it's not so obvious to most people. even therapist, so parents, you know, should look and see it. But you're right. I don't say that because I get anything other than the pleasure of having this hour-long chat every week, but I sincerely mean that because I feel like I do it all the time and I still benefit from watching it.
Well, you that know? Is very nice for you to say, and I hope that you get the rough edit of Apraxia this week so I can see what you think about it, even if it's not quite ready for sale yet. But I hope I can run that by because I am going to have some copies of that.
Oh, that would be great.
All right. Well, to the end of another show, and we are going to be back next Thursday at 2 o'clock. And so join us then. We're still going to keep talking about treating apraxia in toddlers and young preschoolers, and we're going to move on. Today we talked about first words. Next week we're going to talk about more difficult patterns, and we'll get to those specific sound tricks. How do I get an M? How do I get a D? You know, some of those more picky things, and Kate is going to keep it real and remind me when I'm talking too much like a speech pathologist and not enough like a mom needs to hear.
I mean, I think it's critical that people hear that, particularly therapists, but even parents. But I just want them to know that they could think about those things as they're working on them, and as their child makes progress, it'll become more obvious.
It will be, and you know, sometimes
what is she talking about? You know,
well, and sometimes you don't have to understand it to do it. You just have to kind of copy it, and then
right.
It'll start to come easier. And you know, I think about that. Gosh, it's every new phase with my children. I haven't always known how to parent a school-age kid or known how to parent a teenager or known how to parent a kid who is out of high school. You know, but you just kind of learn as you go and you hear these things and read these things, and then it, you know, becomes more natural to you. And that's the same way with working with kids with speech-language delays. It gets easier the more you do it. So there you go.
Absolutely.
All right.
Okay.
Thanks, Kate.
Okay, bye.
Bye.